a suppression of women's rights in the sense of Islam doesn't say, it doesn't talk about equality. Islam talks about equity in the sense of that which is the rightful, that which is the right of the individual to have. Not that which is just given to the person because somebody else feels that is somebody's right to have. And that's where it's so important that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's understanding of human needs are quite clearly nurtured in the behavior of the human being and how they behave with people around them. Obviously, not only just in Britain and how, or in Western countries where Muslim women are stressed in trying to identify themselves as an identity of what form they should take, it's something which has been imposed in Muslim countries during the time of the colonial powers. And how they made people unhijabed, in the sense how they promoted women who were more freer to hang around with colonial powers. Then they gave them more powers and more positions. And they used women as tools of espionage in Muslim countries to get, I mean, one of those individuals who was well known for her espionage and behavior was Gertrude Bell. And how she interacted without hijab, so as to say, within the Muslim elite, pulling the elite towards the desire to have worse social behaviors than to promote good social behavior. And of course, the strength of the Islamic leadership in the form of the Maraji, who gave the rulings of how important the hijab is for sisters to possess for themselves, that played a major part in making sure that we understood how we should interact with the item of protection.
For sure. Now, we haven't got very long left of the show, so I'm going to come back to you, sister, for a final take. Could you just tell me about how is it that Mahsa Amini, I've never met Mahsa, but she doesn't seem like, you know, a militant Western feminist advocate to me. How is it that her name, her brand, became hijacked essentially by these Western groups?
Right. I think by now people probably know that there were 275 million tweets in the name of Mahsa Amini. That is not normal. That magnitude of systemic campaign and aggression against the Islamic Republic on Iran on something that was supposedly alleged tells you that surely there's a greater game at play here. Ultimately, I don't believe that the West is hell-bent, quote-unquote, on regime change in Iran. And the reason I will say this is because they're not naive. They know Iran has reached a position of strength where there is no going back, essentially. They've tried every single means and tactics that exists for them to fragment the nation. I mean, we saw this with the 2009, quote-unquote, Green Revolution, right? We saw that when tens of Iranians came out on the streets when they felt like there might be a threat on the government, that they ultimately drowned those protesters. We saw that. So ultimately, what the West is seeking to do right now is to apply internal pressure through unleashing its underground collaborator networks and their underground hidden cells in order to wreak havoc, to pressurize Iran, so perhaps it might be able to get some concessions on an international scene. It was a pretext to also put sanctions, for example, on Iran to weaken it. But it's not quote-unquote regime change.
Basically using day tactics to try and get what they want out of Iran. And I think it's worth mentioning that there were huge protests in support of the Islamic Republic during this whole affair. That's something worth mentioning as well. But thank you very much to both of my guests today. It's been a very enlightening discussion, to say the least. But that's all the time we have for this edition of Eye on Islam. But join us next week for another edition. And for now, Assalamu Alaikum.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. This question is about the 190th verse of Surah Araf. In Surah Araf, verse 190, we read the following. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. فَلَمَّا آتَاهُمَا صَالِحًا جَعَلَ لَهُ شُرَكَى. When we give them, the two, a righteous child, they, those two, set up partners for him. They set up partners for God. Some people, keeping in mind the fact that a portion of the verse preceding this verse is about Hazrat Adam, the Prophet Adam, and his wife Eve, some people have said that this perhaps refers to the fact that when God gave Adam and Eve a child, those two became polytheists or became idolaters, and they began to set up partners for God. At the same time, we know that this is not something which is suitable for the station of prophecy and nubuwwat, and we know that all of the prophets are, it's our belief that all the prophets are infallible, so we have to somehow interpret this verse in such a way which is and which is compatible with the station of their infallibility. So in order to answer this question, we can say that this verse is not referring to a specific person, a specific set of parents, a specific mother and father. Rather, it's referring to human beings in general. It says that in general, people, you know, when two people get married and they want a child, you know, if they're God-fearing people, they believe in God, you know, they pray to God that God give them a righteous child. And you know, at that time, they're very religious, they're very God-centric, you know, and they're not ghafil and forgetful of God. But when they are given the child, even if he's righteous, they begin to forget God. They begin to, you know, compromise their religious beliefs for what is, in their opinion, the benefit of the child. It happens a lot. So here, first of all, the pronouns are not referring to two people in particular. Rather, every parent and every two parents, every set of parents, every mother and father. And the shirk is not, you know, the literal form of shirk, but rather a practical form of shirk. And, you know, the thing that kind of reinforces the propriety and correctness of this interpretation is the end of the verse. In the end of the verse, God Almighty says, فَتَعَالَ اللَّهُ أَمَّا يُشْرِكُونَ. So God is above that, above the shirk that they do. Here the pronouns are in the plural. Here the plural, the pronouns are in the plural. And this clearly indicates that previously the shirk that was being performed was not being performed by two people in particular. Rather, all mothers and fathers in general, right? And therefore, we can't say that if the God was specifically referring to two people in particular, he would have said, فَتَعَالَ اللَّهُ أَمَّا أَشْرَكَ. May God be above what those two, the shirk that those two did, and then they performed, right? Right, so this is a kind of a clue in the verse that indicates that this is not referring to Adam and Eve, rather other people. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at Surah Araf, verse 190, and its meaning. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight. The aftershocks caused by the coronavirus pandemic, the ineffectiveness of the last three governments in Britain, and the conflict in Ukraine have all joined hands to make the British economy face unprecedented challenges. One of these challenges is the instability and economic recession that has created problems for the British people and also disruption to Britain's labour market. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg television network has more on this story. Britain's job shortages showed signs of easing in the third quarter as more people dropped out of work and wages grew at the fastest pace in over a year, adding to inflationary concerns for the Bank of England. Both the number of employed and unemployed fell, while 108,000 more people became economically inactive in the 3 months to September. That took the total increase in those not seeking work since the start of the pandemic to 630,000. The figure from the Office for National Statistics, ONS, underlined the case for the central bank to keep raising interest rates. Policymakers are seeking to head off a wage price spiral after consumer prices jumped 10.1%, the most in the past four decades. James Smith, developed markets economist at ING, said, "Hiring appetite is undoubtedly past its peak, but there isn't much sign that the acute labour shortages are easing. The labour market is continuing to tighten even though the economy is slipping into recession. That's prompted companies to pay more to lure staff to fill vacancies." The Office for National Statistics revealed that despite strong growth in headline pay, real wages after adjusting for inflation shrank by 2.6%, the steepest decline since the recession in 2009. Britain has been grappling for over a year with chronic job shortages that have forced up pay and led to fears of a wage price spiral at the Bank of England. The Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee has raised interest rates from 0.1% last December to 3% in recent days and is expected to increase them to 3.5% next month. The squeeze has been fueled by the loss of over 500,000 workers in the past 2 years, largely due to long-term sickness. Inactivity, those neither in work nor looking for a job, rose again to 21.6% of working-age adults from July and September. Jane Grattan, head of People and Policy at the British Chamber of Commerce, said, "Although the Office for National Statistics data suggests employers may have started to scale back hiring in the face of a looming recession, the challenges in the labour market remain very much the same. We have a critical shortage of skills and labour that is damaging firms and holding back growth. Staff shortages are pushing up pay, with average weekly earnings excluding bonuses up 5.7% from a year ago, the most since August of 2021, and stronger than the 5.5% pace economists had expected. For private sector workers, regular pay is growing at the fastest pace on record outside the pandemic, gaining 6.6%. Public sector pay grew 2.2%. The Office for National Statistics said the gap between the two is the biggest ever recorded. That gap helps explain ongoing industrial action among public sector unions. Nurses are planning their first major strike in a century. Civil servants are planning industrial action, and teachers are balloting on a strike next year. The website of Yahoo News has also covered the same story. Workers in the United Kingdom saw regular pay jump 5.7%, the strongest growth since outside the pandemic period. But real wages are still falling as inflation soars and unemployment hits 3.6%. According to the Office for National Statistics, ONS, total pay, including bonuses, rose by 6% per year from July to September, while regular pay rose by 5.7%, up from 5.4%. Britain's unemployment rate has also risen amid fears that a recession is looming on the horizon, and inflation rose to 10.1% in September. The rate of unemployment stood at 3.6% in the 3 months to September, up from 3.5% in the 3 months to August. It came as more people dropped out of the workforce, with a hike in the proportion of people neither looking for work nor working. Darren Morgan, Head of Labour and Economic Statistics at the Office for National Statistics, ONS, pointed to a change in demographics that was driving the fall in the number of economically inactive people. Darren Morgan said, "The proportion of people neither working nor looking for work has risen again. Since the onset of the pandemic, this shift has largely been caused by older workers leaving the labour market altogether. But in the most recent quarter, the main contribution has actually come from younger groups of people." More and more businesses are holding back on recruitment as the number of job vacancies fell for a fourth straight month. The number of job vacancies dropped to 1.225 million in August to October of 2022, which is down 46,000 in May to July of 2022. The Office for National Statistics also revealed over 500,000 working days were lost to strike action in August and in September, the highest two-month total in more than a decade. Victoria Scholar, Head of Investment at Interactive Investor, said the figures show signs of an economic slowdown in Britain. Victoria Scholar said, "We are beginning to see tentative signs of an economic slowdown come through in the labour market figures, now with the job vacancies retreating from the highs as businesses make cutbacks and reduce hiring, and with unemployment rates surpassing analysts' expectations." The Business News website covers the same story from a different angle. Britain's biggest recruitment firm, Reed, said the deep cost of living crisis is pushing workers back into the jobs market as inflation forces early retirees to reevaluate their finances. The recruitment firm, Reed, has seen an 8% increase in applications by job seekers since the beginning of September, a sign that rising living costs are forcing people to find work. James Reed, the recruitment giant's chairman, said the increase in applications was partly driven by those coming out of retirement ahead of a fear and a potential drop in the number of jobs available. Businesses are being disrupted due to widespread shortages of workers due to premature retirements and a wave of long-term illness. Britain has seen a surge in the number of people pulling out of the job market since the pandemic reversed trends in the rest of Europe. Weekly data provided by Reed Recruitment to The Telegraph shows increasing applications in recent months as the cost of living crisis has increased. The spike in applications in October was 8% than the levels seen in early September. Reed said, "Our data shows jobs are shrinking but applications are increasing. This is also a reversal as applications are falling during the overall job boom." He added, "This will suggest that those who are not looking are now watching." He warned that the jobs boom runs the risk of turning into a two-year job slowdown as hiring slows sharply. The job market is already showing signs of change. Data from the Recruitment and Employment Confederation, a trade body, found that the number of permanent employees declined for the first time in nearly 2 years in the month of October, while vacancies dropped to record highs. The Bank of England has predicted that unemployment will rise to 6.5% from its current 3.5% if interest rates rise as the market expects. That would mean the loss of hundreds of thousands of jobs, although the unemployment peak will likely be less, as the Bank of England does not expect interest rates to rise as fast as investors bet. City forecasters currently expect unemployment to rise to around 5% by 2024.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University, and researcher in the Hausa Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Professor Nakavi, we would like to start today's discussion with an audience question. We have a lady from India who is saying that I have a niece who is 16 years old and she does not observe hijab. And when we talk to her, she ignores. And when I talk to her mother, she says she is still a child. While as in our previous discussions, you said practical Islamic laws should not be observed at puberty, rather much before than that. And 16 is a very far from the age of puberty for girls. So what do you say on that note?
Yes, exactly. I mean, even if we consider some of the opinion of some ulama who consider the age of puberty to be 13 for girls, even compared to that, 16 is too much, is beyond that age. Normally, the general opinion is 9 years of age. But even if it is 13, then 16 is beyond that. The most important thing is observing hijab, as I said, importantly, everything that a child or a person should do in his life or life for the sake of Islam, for the sake of Allah Almighty, it is very clear that in Islam, we say Allah says, like Rafiddin. You can't enforce people to do things. They have to do it with their own personal volition, voluntarily, with sincerity. So you cannot enforce things upon others. Like Rafiddin does not mean that we can't impose Islamic laws. We can't, though it's not necessary for them to observe hijab if they don't want to do so.
And especially the youth today, you can't impose anything
on
them.
Yes, you can't impose. But that does not mean that Islam does not want them to observe hijab. Islam wants to say, like Rafiddin, I mean, I don't want to enforce this upon you, impose it upon you. I want you to do it voluntarily.
Yeah.
With the reasoning
with
behind.
With sincerity.
With sincerity. You should know why I'm telling you this. Either you understand the reason or you don't understand the reason, but at least you should know that when I'm telling you to do something, it's because of you, what is beneficial for yourself in this world and the hereafter. Therefore, 16 years, she should have been prepared for that. Before that, at an early age, at a tender age, there she would have been able to easily copy her parents, or the women at least, in the family. So that is a problem for the whole society. But especially if one in one's household, one sees the elder women, elder this elder sisters or the mother or the grandmother, they are observing the hijab, so it becomes an easy thing for the child at a tender age. But when it when one comes to the age of puberty and adolescence, there, one if he, a person becomes a little bit, as we will talk about the changes that come about in a child at that age, at a young person, the physical changes are taking place, mental changes are taking place.
Hormonal changes.
He or she becomes quite aggressive.
Yeah.
He or she is starting to develop the understanding or the cognitive process is developing such a way that he or she is challenging everything,
yes.
questioning everything.
Yes.
So there the parents have to deal with that stage very, very tenderly and not to react in such a way that aggressiveness is increased. Therefore, unfortunately, what happens is if a child is not prepared beforehand, then at that age, which is the age of adolescence, it is a sensitive age and it's not very difficult to impose anything upon a child. Therefore, we have in our the hadith, which we have received from the Holy Prophet, it is mentioned that the first 7 years, the second 7 years, the third 7 years,
The entire process of tarbiyah is divided
into three phases. So
yeah.
if that first stage is observed properly, then we can come to a stage where a person is ready to accept the words of
and
the
elders. Each following phase would become easier. As we have practiced.
And so the person who is saying that my niece is not doing so, number one, yes, it is necessary for her to carry out Amr al-Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar for that child. For her mother and explain to her also that 16 is not an age where she should not be observing
yeah.
it. And that is her responsibility.
Yeah, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I am with Professor Naqavi, and we are discussing about adolescence. We discussed an audience question wherein a lady was actually concerned about her 16-year-old niece who was not observing hijab. But Professor Naqavi, you said that before this lady starts doing Amr bin Ma'ruf, inviting towards good to the 16-year-old, she should be doing same for her mother because as a guide, as a parent, as a trainer, if she observes, then it would be very easy for the daughter to observe it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, that is so. I mean, if the mother is resisting that, then how can we expect for the child, her daughter, to accept what her auntie is saying? And therefore, the responsibility becomes a little more difficult for the lady who wants to make the child observe hijab. She must work on the mother first. And the mother, if she wanted to make her observe hijab 16, would be very late for that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, when I have lived in societies wherein if you're teens and you're observing hijab, and then the old women would come and would tell you, are you an auntie that you're putting on hijab? Because they have portrayed, they have actually perceived the image of hijab-wearing girls as the elderly women.
Unfortunately, that is the difficult situation which we find ourselves today, that observing, of course, I'm not saying that hijab is the only thing which has to be taken care of, but it is a symbolic thing for a Muslim lady, for a faithful, practicing Muslim, to observe hijab as a symbol of her faith, as a symbol of our being a religious person.
And in fact, the symbol of your modesty.
Exactly. I mean, we should make people realize women folk especially, that hijab is not a limitation. It is rather emancipation. It gives freedom. It gives dignity. You cover things up which are precious. If you have the crown, if you have jewelry in your house, you will cover them up in something which will provide them protection.
You won't put that in the access of every third person.
Exactly. So something is covered which is precious. Therefore, one should understand that hijab, we should make people understand that hijab is not a limitation. It is not being imposed. It is an obligation which Allah Almighty has made necessary for us for the sake of giving us dignity, providing a society with peace, tranquility, in a society where people do not observe. Hijab is, of course, not just hijab is not just clothing. Hijab is a condition. It's not just only wearing a scarf or a veil or whatever. Hijab is a condition. It has to be observed in one's attire. One has to be observed in one's eyes. It has to be observed in one's way of talking. It has to be observed in one's way of walking.
That's so beautiful.
I mean, this is which is there in the Quran. For each and every of these instances, Quran is talking about the hijab.
Yeah.
Hijab is just limited to one thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's not only for women, also, it's for men also.
Yeah, we would love to know about that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us. يا مقضي
الخيرات The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I am with Professor Naqavi and we're discussing the concept of hijab, how you can teach this concept to your adolescents. Well, Professor Naqavi, before going to the break, you touched a very, very important point that when you're teaching hijab to adolescents, it's not just the outer covering to be taught to daughters. It's also something that you got to teach to your boys.
Exactly.
How?
I mean, as I was mentioning, it has been mentioned in the Holy Quran that men folk should lower their gazes, women folk should lower their gazes. That is the hijab in the eyes.
Wow.
That is to be taken care of. Of course, the basic thing is that one of the issues that is there in the hijab, or in any way, anything which is related to hijab, any form, any thought, or anything which leads to feelings which arise in us, which are specifically feelings which are there between a man and his wife, as a husband and wife, the feelings which are aroused to carry out the sexual relationship, that is very necessary. If that is not there, one cannot carry out that union of the man and woman to create that relationship which leads to the offspring. That is something natural. It has to be there. Those desires, those feelings, those emotions are very important for the sustenance of human life. But they have to be managed. They have to be controlled.
When it comes to non-mahrams especially.
When it becomes to non-mahrams. And therefore, any condition which leads to the arousal of such feelings in any other condition which is apart from the relationship between the man and the wife are condemnable. They cannot be allowed. Even if a person is looking at at a statue and those feelings are created, it is not permissible. One should desist from observing or looking at a thing. What to say of a non-mahram person? So the hijab in the eyes is desisting and reserve and restraining oneself and refraining from looking at anything which leads to those feelings. So that is one thing. That is important. Or touching something which causes those feelings. Or any condition which you can find yourself in where those feelings are aroused and you are not able to satisfy yourself in the halal way, they have to be
controlled and managed.
Therefore, if it is as a result of looking at someone, or listening to someone, or even walking in a way that causes those feelings to arise in the other person.
You've got to control all that.
They have to. So the basic thing is that those feelings have to be managed.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Professor Naqavi, for being with us and for giving us such a beautiful concept of hijab and answering this question in the best possible way you could. Dear sisters and daughters listening out there, if I say to myself that hijab is something which, I should be, it's for myself, so I won't be doing it for myself. It's all about my grave. It's all about my choice. It's all about my life, as per the so-called hashtags. No, it's about the modesty of your brothers that you could help in, that you could maintain, in addition to your own modesty. Thank you so much for being with us. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, December 18th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages from around the world. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world, which I mention their names. Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, and Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain. So, Yusuf, Mizanur Rahman, and Juan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. As you may know, these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL or electronic QSL card from us. And of course, we've received piles of letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read your letters. As I said, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco has sent us an email. From India, we've received an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharji. Hector Friyakhofre from Chile has sent us an email. Muhammad Aslam from India has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from Ismo Kapi from Finland. So stay tuned, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. From Morocco, we've received an email from Yusuf Ben Meir. Let's see what Yusuf says. Dear IRIB English Radio staff, greetings. I know that the electronic card is easier to send, and I hope that things will improve as soon as possible. However, I prefer to receive a paper QSL card rather than an electronic one or an eQSL, and I hope that would be possible for you to send me one. I hope you are all fine. Greetings to you from Morocco. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, Yusuf from Morocco. Please accept our appreciations to you for this email. Here, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I extend my congratulations to you, Yusuf, from Morocco, for the remarkable performance of your national football team in Qatar World Cup. They were really great, your footballers. And please send our greetings to your fellow countrymen in Morocco. And Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco, regarding your request about sending you a paper QSL card, unfortunately, I should say that in the time of pandemic, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio staff is not possible. Maybe after the pandemic, we will go back on the track to send our great listeners around the world those souvenirs of the past. So, in the time being, please accept our EQSL as verification. So, thank you very much for this email, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from India, we've received an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharji. Siddhartha Bhattacharji says, "Here, I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, a calendar, sticker, and other promotional material. Hope all of your staff are safe. Salam and warm greetings to you, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you for your support and commitment to your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. And regarding your request about sending you the materials you requested, including the program schedule, calendar, sticker, and other promotional material, unfortunately, it is not possible in the time of pandemic. Maybe after the pandemic, as I said, we will get back on track and sending you, our great listeners, the materials you requested. And for the time being, you can refer to our website to receive the program schedule at www.parstoday.com/en. At the time being, please accept our EQSL as verification. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India. We wish you all the best and hope you are safe and fine. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. One of our old and regular listeners from Chile has sent us a piece of email, Hector Friahofre. Let's see what Hector says. Dear friends of the IRIB English Radio, I send my greetings and also a report. I enclose to my email an audio clip confirming that I have been a listener of your radio. I would like to receive information about your country, and I certainly want to obtain a QSL card or EQSL if it would be possible. Thank you in advance for all your efforts. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And many thanks for this email, Hector Friahofre from Chile. Please accept our warm gratitude to you for this email. And we thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best, Hector. Write to us soon, please, and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And again, from India, we've received an email, this time from Muhammad Aslam. Muhammad Aslam from India says, "Dear IRIB staff, thank you for giving a quick reply to your listeners. I appreciate your staff and the programs you air in shortwave every day. I'm glad that I can hear your radio since the reception is fine at my home. Thank you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Aslam from India, and please accept our warm appreciations to you for your support to IRIB English Radio. Wish you luck. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as verification to this email. Muhammad Aslam from India, thank you very much for this email. Welcome back. And from Finland, we've received an email from Ismo Kapi. Let's see what Ismo Kapi says. Greetings. I am happy to report that I hear IRIB English Radio quite clear in Finland. Please listen to the recording I made and attach to verify I heard you. My name is Ismo Kapi and I am 57 years old from Finland. I am married and have three lovely children. I live in a small city 60 kilometers west from Helsinki, the capital of Finland. My hobby is DXing. It is the hobby of receiving and identifying distant radio or television signals. First of all, salam and greetings to you, Ismo Kapi, and thank you very much for this email. So, you live in a small city west of Helsinki. It's good to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in that region, far away land. So, your hobby is DXing, but Ismo Kapi, please be our regular listener and tell us your views about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best at IRIB English Radio. Anyway, we wish you all the best and please send our greetings to your lovely family. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as verification. Welcome back, and as I always say, art is long, but life is short. So, before saying goodbye to you and before wrapping up this edition of Listeners Special, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our listeners who kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Yusuf Ben-Meir from Morocco, Mizanu Rahman from Bangladesh, Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain, Hector Friahofre from Chile, and Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, Muhammad Aslam again from India, and Ismo Kapi from Finland. Many thanks for being with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity. Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. In a previous episode, we were looking at interest, riba, and how it is devastating for the person's life in this world and in the hereafter. Now, why did Islam took such a strong stand against interest and does not want its followers to indulge themselves in any loan that has interest in it? Now, there are a number of reasons to why Islam has stood firmly against it. Truth be said, we can't go over every reason, but we can go over few reasons. One of the reasons that the interest is not allowed is because the rates will go higher. First, interest rate itself, it will go higher. The more people indulge in it, the more greedy the banks will become, the more they will ask of people. When they see me and you happily and willingly giving them